Hello and welcome to episode 3 of the First and Gold podcast, where our takes are better than Andy Katz's preseason rankings. Hello, everybody. I am Ben Roberts, joined with Sim Longa. Let's just dive right into it, Sim. Over the weekend, the Boilermakers were scheduled to play a game against Notre Dame. Not sure. A lot of the players showed up or knew that the game was going on because they got punched in the mouth from the beginning. Notre Dame really never looked back and defeated the Boilermakers 66-7. So Sim, let me just ask you, what the hell was that?
I don't know, man. I don't know. I just I it just from head to toe was just bad. There was just never a moment. I think when for myself, like obviously I went to the game, and when you leave a game and you think that the best part of the day was the tailgating beforehand, I think that's when you know like it probably didn't go that well. And just yeah, from head like head to toe, it's just so bad. There was just never really a moment where you felt like we had anything going. I mean, even when we did, it just usually, you know, in the off chance that we did, you know, there's a bad play that happened right after it. You know, you have 2 straight 7-yard run plays by Reggie Love. Next play, pick six. So I don't know. I mean, you said they were scheduled to play a game. Somebody was in some Purdue jerseys. I kind of refused to believe it was us. Like our guys were actually in those jerseys.
Yeah, so just again, we're not going to go through the stats too much on this one. Basic rundown, any stat that's out there, Notre Dame had a lot and Purdue had very little.
Basically.
66-7 was the final. The most points ever allowed in program history and the largest margin of defeat. Let that sink in for just 1 second again. And we've been through some dark times during the Hazel era, Jim Coletto era. The most points allowed in program, a program record for most points allowed in margin of defeat. And this was coming off a bye week. And we talked about it last week. And we sound pretty dumb now, but we were confident going into last week. We both predicted Purdue to win. And we weren't alone in that. Let's just get that out there. Also, we weren't just out on a limb. Lots of people I saw on Twitter. And in fact, even Pat McAfee on game day picked the Boilers to win. But I mean, just a real head scratcher. And we talked about it earlier, and to me, the best way I can chalk this game up is I'm not angry, I'm just disappointed. Just a lot of disappointment. And like you said, it's across the board. I mean, it starts with Coach Walters, the coordinators, everybody down, like coming off a bye week. This is what you have. Like, it was just a really disappointing outcome.
Yeah, no, I think I think you know you mentioned it earlier about how like you know we as Purdue fans have been through some dark days, you know, especially recently. And that look that what you saw on Saturday looked a lot like what you saw like as recently, you know, as you were mentioning the Hazel era. You know, I one game that comes to my mind is thinking about that Cincinnati game, Hazel's first game, losing, I believe it was a 49-7. And if you were at that game, like I was, you knew like the only way that the Purdue scored was because Cincinnati muffed a punt and then we scored the next play. But outside of that, really could get nothing going. And it was like that same feeling on Saturday. And I think that's what's that was what was worrying from what I just the people around me, other people I've spoken to like after the game, even the Notre Dame fans at the game, man. I was talking to them and they were like, yeah, we didn't see it going like this. Like and that, you know, as we talked about, you mentioned earlier, we talked about last week, like this was an opportunity for Purdue in so many ways. It was an opportunity for them. You know, you have this game at home. Notre Dame's clearly struggling. You have a bye week. And then too, you look at the actual game and it's not like Notre Dame did anything special. They didn't do anything that you didn't know they were going to try to do. We're going to try to run. They're going to use Leonard to run. They were going to try to impose more with the run because as a defense, you know, you want to make Riley Leonard throw because you don't believe he can beat you with his arm. And it just never had to go to that. And it just, it was head scratching. It was mind boggling. It just, when I woke up on Saturday, that was not the way I thought. That was not the way I left driving back home, was not the way I thought I would feel. You know, if you told me that at the beginning of the day, I wouldn't have believed it. I just wouldn't have believed that. I'd have been like, okay, well, what happened? Who got hurt? You know, something like that. Maybe there's something to point to of like, okay, well, this is why it went this way. And it was just across the board. It wasn't good. It was not good. And obviously we have to be better. You know, you don't get a week off now. Obviously you turn around and now you fly across the country and go to play Oregon State. But yeah, man, it was so bad. So bad.
And I think it was just frustrating because it felt like a game where, like, especially early, there was chances to make a play, and it just never happened. And not only did it not happen, but it was like the opposite. Like, especially in the trenches, man, Purdue just got manhandled. I mean, Notre Dame set the edge every single time, I think. I don't know what the defensive scheme was or what the plan was. But Purdue did a terrible job of trying to keep contain on the edges. Defensively, Purdue did a terrible job tackling. I believe it was 15 credited missed tackles. I haven't gone back to look, but I'm sure there was probably more than that. And I mean, it was just, and it wasn't like there was like breakdown of plays or busted coverages. It was effort. It was, you know, basic tackling drills. I think that's what was really frustrating. It's like, oh, well, you know, these two guys got confused on what kind of coverage they were running and had a busted play. It's like, no, Notre Dame just ran the same play off tackle. We couldn't set the edge. We couldn't tackle. And it was chunk play after chunk play after chunk play. And I don't, it was just a real head scratcher.
Yeah, I mean, head scratcher. Yeah, it's probably the best way to say it. But yeah, I mean, you mentioned 15 credited missed tackles. And I was going to say that's assuming that someone was even around to make a tackle because of the number of times I saw someone from Notre Dame bouncing it out to the outside and nobody there. Nobody there for at least, you know, 5-10 yards. Before, you know, some contact is made. It just looked like I joked with some friends about how it looked like it was the first time Purdue was playing organized football. It was head scratching, man. It was just head scratching to watch that poor of a performance just across the board too. Cause that's the thing, is like, you could sit there and, you know, you can have a bad performance, but you're like, you can point to, well, at least you were able to do this, or like, oh, we just like weren't able to score enough. And you're right, too. I mean, Notre Dame gets the ball first and they go down, they drive, they score, but then they don't score again until the end of the first quarter. So it's like we had some opportunities in terms of having the ball and having a chance to then, you know, be able to respond and answer. And even if it's just going down and, you know, you get a couple field goals. And so even then when they score, instead of it being, you know, 14-0 at that point, then it's, you know, it's 14-6. At least, you know, hey, look, we can move on these guys. We can get some points. And obviously, too, you talk about complementary football, you know, both sides of the ball helping each other out. So the offense being able to move the ball allows the defense some time to rest, to where then when they can come out, hopefully get a stop, and then the offense can, you know, hopefully continue to move down the field and, you know, and score. And there were no signs of that. It was extremely head scratching performance. And I guess the silver line, I guess not the silver lining, the thing I'm thinking about in my head, and I've been thinking about this for the last probably 24 hours, has been like, this needs to be a pivot point for everyone in the program in terms of the way that you prepare, the way that you, you know, that the how you go into these games, like all of that, I believe, needs to change, because what you did was clearly good enough to beat Indiana State, but you were supposed to beat Indiana State the way you were supposed to. You weren't supposed to lose to Notre Dame like this, especially after the tape you'd seen on Notre Dame. You weren't supposed to lose to them like this. So it really is going to be a reflection point for many, many people, as it should be, going forward.
Yeah, I agree. And I think one thing that kind of stood out that we haven't really talked about, I can't talk specifically on the defensive side. Yeah, there was the missed tackles. There were those things. But another week where not a lot of, like, big plays, no turnovers. And, you know, for a team that needs to have some breaks go their way, just because a majority of the games they play, let's just be honest, they're not going to have as much talent as the other team with the schedule that they have. So you have to do things to help yourself out. You got to make plays. You got to generate turnovers, flip the field. And even against Indiana State and now Notre Dame, they haven't been able to do that. And, you know, two games now, does it start to become a trend and something that you really worry about? Because you're not going to win a lot of games if you don't win the turnover battle.
Absolutely. Absolutely, man. You have to, like you said, you have to be able to get sacks. You have to be able to generate some turnovers. And now we're through two games and we haven't done that. And, you know, I think, you know, last week we were talking and I know I specifically said, look, I have pretty good faith that if you put the ball in Riley Leonard's hands, he's going to throw you a couple. He's going to give you the chance for a couple picks. And that never materialized because they were able to run the ball so well. And even the throws that he did have to make, they weren't hard throws. He was making, the longest throw he had was for 23 yards. It's something that definitely concerns you going forward about, well, if your defense, like you said, if you're not as skilled from a talent level, a talent standpoint, if your talent isn't as good as, like, you know, when you, what is it, play Penn State, play Oregon, when the talent level isn't the same, you have to do something to try to generate some things to go in your favor, generating some turnovers. And you haven't seen that to this point. And it's definitely one of the questions that you have going forward about, like, or will it change? And are you going to see some more risk taking, you know, something that's to try to change that? Because I got to think, you know, you have to think that the coaches are aware of that as well, of like, man, we need to find ways to generate some big plays or to steal possessions too. Cause that was kind of what my thought process was going into last week, is like, you need to get a couple extra possessions, and that can happen. You know, obviously that happens through turnovers. And you know, clearly we didn't do that. We lost a turnover battle. I believe it was 2-0. So it's just head scratching.
That's all you can do is just say, right. I'm not angry. I'm just disappointed.
Right.
But let's flip it over to the offensive side. And to me, I've seen a lot of, you know, calling out Hudson Carr, calling out the offensive coordinator. And like we've talked about, I mean, everybody needs to kind of look in the mirror after a game like that. But to me, this was a game that was really hard to judge the offense simply because the O-line got dominated. They couldn't establish the run at all, which is something I was really surprised at. I thought that Maccabee and Love would be able to get things going on the ground, and they just weren't able to do it at all, especially in the first half. And then when Hudson did drop back, he didn't have any time. He didn't get a lot of help from his receivers at all. There was at least a couple drops in my head that I can remember on easy throws. And so to me, specifically on the offensive side and specifically with Hudson, it was a game that's really hard to gauge because he didn't get any help and the O-line was just not great in the trenches. And didn't give him or the running game a lot to work with.
Yeah, no, I would agree. I think that you needed better from your O-line. And just kind of in general, we were talking about the trenches, and I know you were trying to shift this more to the offense, but that was also kind of what was puzzling about what took place in the trenches on both sides, is that Notre Dame was losing guys on both lines, and it seemed like it didn't do anything to them, and it almost like it made them better. And especially like you said, yeah, on offense, I mean, if your line can't block, Carr doesn't have time. And if the receivers aren't able to get open, you know, fast enough, then, you know, you're not going to be able to get the ball. Like there's nowhere to throw to. So now he's holding onto the ball. It just, yeah. And I thought, I figured we'd be able to run the ball again, just from what you'd seen from Notre Dame. You just kind of figured like, okay, we'll be able to run the ball. And then that allows you to be able to kind of stay the course and be able to have a nice balance of run and run and pass. Cause I also thought too, like you couldn't just sit there and tell Carr to throw 50 times. Like that was not the recipe either. But if you had some nice balance, again, that was what we talked about last week in terms of the, you know, keys for success for Purdue to win. And that just wasn't a reality. So like, you know, you weren't able to get anything from your skill positions, but I think more of that kind of originates from the performance within the trenches. Cause I think if you control the trenches, you like your chances. We didn't, we got dominated. And thus in the score, you know, the score and the stats and all of that, it all reflects that.
Yeah. And of course you would like to see like some deep shots, because that'll loosen up things on the defensive side. But it's kind of like a double-edged sword, because in order to get deep threats, you got to have time to let the receivers get downfield.
Absolutely.
But I say that all to say, I think that Harrell needs to try to figure out some things on the offensive side. And if I'm him, I honestly go back and look at some of the tape that Brom has, because for everything that Brom did at Purdue, 9 times out of 10, his team did not have the most talent on the field, but he was able to come up with some play. You knew there was going to be a handful of plays on offense that Purdue is going to play, whether it be some type of trickery, some type of deep ball. Purdue was going to hit a couple of those plays. And you haven't really seen it to that extent. And maybe we were spoiled with Brom in that, because I think that was obviously Brom's biggest strength. But I think there's something to take away from that to try to build around this offense. But again, it just, man, it starts with that O-line, because if you can't have time to get the ball downfield, you can't call deep shots. But, you know, just thinking back in my head too, I don't remember a whole lot of screenplays called either. And I'm talking about running back screenplays. There was a couple bubble screens, I think. But man, it's frustrating, because one of the things we took away was that Purdue has some playmakers. And we just overall, obviously you only scored one touchdown, but we just didn't do a very good job of giving the playmakers a chance.
Yeah. Kind of to piggyback on your piece about like the play calling, I think like one of the things that you would see with Brom too is I just feel like there were more in-game adjustments. I just felt like there were a lot of times it was like, okay, we're trying to do this, and like, oh, that's not working. All right, cool. Well, we're really like scrap that for right now. We're gonna try this out. Just something to try to generate, because again, like there was time before it got really bad. I mean, honestly, it didn't really get bad until like the last 5 minutes of the second quarter. It was 21-0
right before half.
Right. I think with 5 minutes left in the second half, and then, you know, obviously by the end of the half, it was 42-0. So even at 21-0, it's like you still have an opportunity of like, hey, if we can generate something and be able to go down and get a touchdown, like, okay, cool, that's able to kind of calm everybody down. And I know I'd mentioned, you know, offline about how I would have liked to see us go to like to try to go to tempo, something that's a little faster. You can get the ball out faster. And I think too, like you said, like some running back screens would have been good, because if you're struggling to create protection to where Card can make these deep throws, and you're allowing your skill, you know, your wide receivers to kind of to be able to run some of the deeper routes, the routes that just take more time. If you're struggling getting that protection for that, well then let's take advantage of like, let's try to use their go get itness, so to speak, in terms of like the defense about in terms of how well they're getting to you, try to use that against them, you know, and you run a screen, and that, you know, that can be a big play right there. And it kind of creates some, and it can kind of create, I think, some second guessing on the defense's end going forward, because now they're like, oh crap, like that might happen again. And it just didn't seem like there was any type of adjusting. Feel free to correct me if I was wrong. I just felt like we were trying to stick to our original game plan. And it was like, at a certain point, it's like you at least need to embrace, I mean, you at least need to try something else to see if that can't get you going.
No, I'm right there with you. And that's also, and again, not to like beat a dead horse, but that's what made this game so frustrating, is to your point, it was right there for a while. And you know, that's also why I feel like I'm not as worried as other people on Twitter, or, you know, on the message boards or wherever, you know, that the sky is falling and all of this. It was 21-0. You had the ball, and you're getting the ball to start the second half. So there was an opportunity to get right back in that game, and then things went south real quick, really, really quick. And then, you know, it was basically over after that. But, you know, it's not like it was domination. You know, like you're down 21-0, jump type thing, if that makes sense. So that was another frustrating thing to you, that I saw. And to your point, the offense just feels very scripted, and not a lot of flow. I totally agree with you. I would have liked to see kind of like a hurry up, just to kind of get things going, you know, just to try to get some juice going.
Yeah.
Because that's what was really needed. There was just no life in the offense or the defense, but in the offense specifically, there was just no life. And I do wonder if you did something like that, and you were able to get some positive plays, kind of how that might have changed things.
Absolutely. Yeah, man. I just, yeah, like you said, I think it felt the offense just felt very scripted. And yeah, it's just kind of like, what's the worst that could happen if you, you know, if you try to go hurry up, you know, it's essentially just, the worst that's going to happen is that you're still at where you're at, which is where, you know, you're still struggling to move the ball and whatnot, but at least it's just, hey, look, we're trying to do something to get this going. Cause sometimes too, like going into a hurry up can get you into a rhythm. And especially like if you then at that point are able to get Hudson Card into a rhythm, and now the game is kind of slowing down for him through this hurry up, that again, that bodes well. Cause obviously while the idea going into it might not have been of, hey, look, he's going to need to throw us to a win. If it turns into that, then hey, that's what we have to ride with, you know? And then maybe hopefully, like, you know, as the defense then has to adjust, because if he starts carving you up in the air, you know, you can't load the box. Maybe you're sending, you know, you're sending, you know, the linebackers now are playing more back in coverage, which then, you know, kind of hopefully then is able to allow the run game to get going. And again, it can kind of be like a backhanded way of restoring some balance and some order to your offense. And it just, yeah, it just, you didn't see that. And so I'm curious again, I'm curious to see what they do this week. And if you start to see at least a willingness to try different things within a game.
Yeah. And also just to kind of talk about the offense, because I think that it had the potential to be a swing play. And
before I even start this, let me just get it out there. I am not saying that Purdue lost because of the officiating at all. Purdue got manhandled, and they lost that game. They deserve to lose that game. But does anybody know what the hell is targeting in college football anymore? Like, what are we doing? I just got to rant for just 1 minute because it's the most frustrating thing, especially as a Purdue fan. It feels like it always goes against Purdue. But there was a play where Max Clair had it. It was ruled incomplete. And I believe incomplete was the right call. I don't think that he had made a football move.
Right.
And a Notre Dame player, I can't remember who it was, clear targeting, launch helmet to helmet. And they didn't even review it. Like, what are we doing with this rule? The inconsistency for the targeting rule is got to be one of the most frustrating things in football right now, because I feel like you can see it a thousand different ways, and literally it's a coin flip. Like, there's no consistency to the rule at all. Obviously you weren't able to watch the broadcast, but watching the broadcast, they had Gene on there, and Gene said, regardless of if he caught it, it was targeting. And if it was ruled incomplete, he was in a defenseless receiver and it was targeting. So either way you look at it, the fact that they didn't even review it, it boggles my mind and it's super frustrating. Like, as a fan, you just want to see things called consistently. And that is the most inconsistent call in football. And it drives me crazy, and I just had to get that off my chest. So thank you.
Nah, man, you're spot on there. Yeah, I didn't get to hear it on the broadcast, but I did hear from people like yourself who were watching the game about how Gene came in and was like, "Yeah, that's targeting. Like, however you want to slice it up, it's targeting." But it's seeming like targeting is becoming more of a like your interpretation. I know, I mean, wasn't necessarily trying to talk about another game, but I was watching, I watched a bit of the IU UCLA game that took place later in the day. And there was a bad targeting call that went against IU. And obviously, like, I want IU to lose. I'm not going to sit here and be like, "Oh, go IU," obviously. But like, I watched that and I remember thinking like, yeah, I don't think that's targeting. And sure enough, they came out, and I think they even had the replay analyst on. He was like, "Yeah, I don't think this is targeting." And they come on there, and they're like, "After review, it is targeting," and then disqualify the cornerback out the game. And it's like, it's a big call, because however it goes, and as you mentioned, it far too often, as us as Purdue fans, I think we all have a lot more of examples of where we have gotten the short end of the straw, whether it was something that got called targeting and it was targeting, like, you know, we look at the replay and it's like, yeah, that's targeting. And then all of a sudden it gets reversed, or something that's not. And then it gets called targeting and it's upheld. You know, we just seemingly find ourselves in the short end of the, with the short end of the straw. But yeah, it's definitely, definitely one of the more frustrating calls just in football in general right now. So yeah, I remember that play. There were expletives that were let off in the stands. I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, and again, I don't want it to make it sound like I'm blaming the refs.
Right, right. Because you're right. That is not why. That is not why Purdue lost at all.
But it's just super frustrating to see, and would just like to see a little bit of consistency. And like you said, it's such a big call, because you could potentially get ejected and or miss the start of the first half of the next game. So to just have it be so inconsistent is just super frustrating.
It's a play too that it can extend a drive. Like if that play happens on a third down, it's very clearly targeting and it doesn't get called. Well, now you have to punt, but you should actually get 15 yards and then the drive should keep going. So yeah, it's important. Like, it's like that call being, because of how frequently it's being called, and obviously there rightfully so, there's an emphasis on player safety. It behooves everyone to be thorough, and I think to be at more of a common understanding of what is and what isn't targeting. And I feel like at one point we kind of like we did have that, but it just feels like really in the last like couple years, like it's really gone back to it's gone away from kind of understanding what targeting was to where now there's just more room for interpretation. And because there's more room for interpretation, that's how you find yourself in so many situations where even when the replay analyst comes on over the broadcast and says one thing, you'll turn around and find out, nope, it wasn't. So yeah, but again, that is not why Purdue lost. It is not why
It's
they
not.
lost at all. So we're not sitting here saying that they lost because of the refs. Believe me, we'll do plenty of that during basketball.
Definitely will. I think Zach Edey just got fouled again in the rest and call it.
Hashtag just don't.
Let's switch gears a little bit, Sim, because I do want to talk about the volleyball team.
Yes, sir.
And they had just another awesome weekend. And quite frankly, they went down to Texas and they handled their business. And again, balled out, Sim. I mean, they are putting up some impressive wins.
Yeah, man. I mean, for what they're doing right now in the non-con portion of the program is really special. I mean, to beat Houston, and then beat Kentucky. They swept Houston, never trailed, never gave up the lead. I think yeah, they never trailed. There was what well, they were tied once. Just all around, just good performances. And then to turn around and then face Kentucky, they lost. They dropped the first set, which is actually only the third set that they've dropped the entire year. They're 24-3 on the year in terms of like set count. But they dropped the first set and then come back in the second set, and they were like, yeah, like what you just saw there, that's a one-off. And then got active immediately. I think they won the second set 25-12, and then there was no looking back from there. They've been playing really, really well. And I believe I saw a stat. I think this is like the fourth time that Purdue started 8-0 under Dave Schondell, and the first time they have since 2018. So I mean they and now it's not like they're just beating, like clearly inferior competition. You beat Kentucky, that's a top 10 team. And then what they're staring down the barrel of next week in terms of with the Jayhawk Classic, another opportunity to again make some noise and really show like, hey, like we're actually someone to be reckoned with. And you could argue too that it only get harder once they get into the conference season.
Yeah, because the Big Ten conference as
I
it
mean.
is normally is just absolutely loaded. And to me, like the one big thing about the matchup with Kentucky is that it's just such a sign of like a really good team when you lose that first set. And it was almost like, okay, bet. And they just turned it up a whole nother level. And really never looked back. And so, I mean, that to me just kind of shows like how special this team can be. And also like a shout out to, and I think it's one thing that Matt Painter does a really good job of, and it's really cool to see other sports do too, is when you challenge yourself in the non-con, and play some really good competition because you're only going to get positive results no matter the outcome. So really cool to see. Like you said, they go to Kansas Thursday night to play the number 10 ranked Kansas Jayhawks. And that game is going to be on ESPN Plus. So if you have a chance to watch it, man, check that out because these ladies, I think, are doing something special right now. They've moved up in the rankings to number 6. Raven Colvin was Big Ten Defensive Player of the Week. Got to give a little shout out also to the MVP of the Invitational last week, Miss
Yeah,
Ava
Ava.
Hutchinson.
Yeah.
Ava Hutson, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
So just, I mean, just all around, just they're just playing great right now.
Yeah, Taylor Anderson, it's Chloe Chacon. I mean, all the ladies, they're just getting contributions all across the board, and you know, that's what you want to see. And I agree with you too, like when you test yourselves in the non-conference, I think it bodes well for you, really, win or loss, because I think you learn, you learn early on, like what you're like, who you have, like what your team is. But I think even as a coaching staff, then it gives you an opportunity to understand, okay, where are the areas we might have some weaknesses, what are our strengths, and then trying to be able to kind of make changes or you know, just get strategy, whatnot, changes that will bode well for that, but like bode well for you going forward, to where, you know, like, as especially like we mentioned with the Big Ten, is just historically like a strong conference when it comes to volleyball. It's like, okay, now we get into conference play, we've already kind of been through some wars, so now we kind of know what we need to be working on, where our strengths are, whatnot. And I think it just, it bodes well for the program. So yeah, I mean, I you, like you said, it seems as though these ladies are starting something very special. And so, yeah, the fact that, you know, this the first match on Thursday against Kansas is on ESPN Plus, definitely something you want to make sure you tapped into if you're able to sit down in front of a TV or heck, a phone or a laptop screen, and just make sure you're tapping in early. You want to be on the ground floor of this scandal.
Yep. So, just again, that matchup Thursday, the 19th at 7:30 p.m. Eastern time. So make sure to check that out if you can. That will just about wrap this one up. Again, kind of the format that we're going to do is recap each game, and then later in the week, we're going to do a little preview episode. So be on the lookout for that. Probably Wednesday or Thursday, we'll really dive into kind of what Purdue, what the football team can do moving forward, and just kind of what we want to see as they head to Oregon State this weekend for a game under the lights, which will be very interesting to see. But again, we'll break that all down later this week. Sim, as we kind of close this one out, any final words there?
It was bad, but at the end of the day, it's one loss. So, you know, you want to try to, as hard as it might be right now, to try to maintain some optimism about what we can do going forward the rest of the season. Yeah, I mean, it was, there's no dancing around it. Obviously, it wasn't great, but it is just one game. And this very well could be, if, you know, if we're sitting back here at the end of the year and, you know, we've improved from this game, and this was the game that kind of turned things around. I mean, all right, that's, I can live with that. So
yeah, I would agree with that. So there you have it. Appreciate y'all listening again. You can find us on Twitter at First and Gold PU. Please give us a 5-star rating and a review if you think that's what we deserve. Thank you all for listening again, and boiler up.